Leslie Visconti, licensed psychologist, counselor, and marriage and family therapist. Tonight, we will be discussing domestic violence. I invite our listeners to call in with questions or comments at 1-800-552-8502. This evening, we have as our guests Executive Director for the Providence House, Bernie Howard, Director of Women and Children's Programs for the Shreveport-Bossier Rescue Mission, Donna Otwell, and Provisional Licensed Professional Counselor with Samaritan Counseling, Valencia Jones. Thank you for joining us this evening, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I want to start out by having each of you just kind of introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about you and your various organizations. So I guess, Bernie, we will start with you.
I'm Bernie Howard, Executive Director of the Providence House. I am going into my fourth year as Executive Director. Providence House is a homeless shelter for families with children, single men, single women, married couples with children. And on a daily basis, we serve an average of 200 people. And of those 200, 140 are homeless children, 0 to 17. And most of our residents, about 77%, are in our house because of domestic violence. So every single day we're working to fight against all of the ills that come along with domestic violence.
And Donna, would you tell us a little bit about you and specifically what you do at the Shreveport-Bossier Rescue Mission?
Yes, ma'am. I'm the director of the Women's and Children's Program. We house multiple women from all different walks of life. From one of our largest is domestic violence. That's one of the biggest issues that we face there at the mission. And we have multiple programs that help facilitate these ladies in growing into understanding that there's more to life than being troubled by these things that they suffer with.
And Valencia, tell us a little bit about you and Samaritan and what all you do.
Okay, well, I've done a lot of work with Purchase, Not for Sale, which is a human trafficking division. I did a lot of domestic violence work with them. I also am a member of the Caddo-Bossier Domestic Violence Task Force under Jim Taliaferro. And I'm a PLPC at Samaritan Counseling Center, where I specialize in domestic violence victims as well as the abusers. Then anger management. And I started a campaign called Don't Stall, Make the Call, which is an abuse prevention program. And last but not least, I'm actually a domestic violence survivor.
And I want you to tell us a little bit about Don't Stall, Make the Call, because that's a new program that people probably are not familiar with. So would you tell us just a little bit about what that is?
Sure. It's a campaign that is a community call to action to help stop domestic violence or any form of abuse. So if you see, hear, suspect that someone's being abused, don't stall, make the call to 911 or any authorities of that establishment. The campaign asks the community to be the strength for those who are most vulnerable so we can stop violence and save lives.
So let's start by talking about the prevalence of domestic violence. I know, Bernie, that you mentioned that quite a few of the people that your organization serves have been involved in some sort of domestic violence.
That's absolutely correct. 77% of our residents come to recognize and realize homelessness because of domestic violence. And I think the cruelest part of domestic violence is its impact on children. When children see an abuser, and sometimes that abuser, it's sometimes assumed that it's just the man in the relationship, but sometimes it's the female in the relationship. But those habits, that anger trickle down to our children. And so we see a lot of the effects of domestic violence even within our children. It's heartbreaking when you hear a woman who has endured years and years of abuse and finally decides, enough is enough. And more often than not, they're doing it. They try to get out of those relationships for the benefit of their children.
And that's, what you described is the cycle of violence, that we have one family that then passes it down through modeling and seeing this as through their childhood and so forth. And then that cycle just continues.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So since everybody here works with either domestic violence victims or perpetrators, what are some of the misconceptions that y'all have come across regarding domestic violence?
Well, for us, we recognize that because there's not necessarily a certain face to domestic violence. Domestic violence comes in all different types, walks, from wealthy to middle class to the poverty level. You know, addiction is a large part that plays in the domestic violence situation, because a lot of times the woman or the man find themselves falling into drug abuse or alcohol abuse because, you know, they feel that that's the only way that they can cope with what's going on. And so it's a well-rounded situation. It's, you know, if you want to call it that, there's a lot of obstacles that we have to help them cross whenever it comes to the situation of domestic violence. I, too, am a domestic violence survivor all the way from my childhood up to my adulthood. Mm-hmm. And so I know personally myself as a child, you know, how it affected me. It developed a low self-esteem. It developed a guilt sense that, you know, there something was wrong with me, and this is why this is happening in my life, you know. And it tends to make you feel like that, you know, there's nothing different. Mm-hmm. And so our goal is when we have ladies come in that are fleeing from domestic violence, is to help them see and help them understand that this isn't normal, you know, that there is something different, that there is something positive, and there is a thing called love that's really love, and it doesn't hurt.
Yeah. And oftentimes with my patients that I work with, whether they're children or adults who have witnessed domestic violence or been a victim themselves, I see high levels of anxiety and depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and as you said, low self-esteem, feeling like maybe somehow they've done something to deserve this, and really working with them can be difficult to help them see that they are worthy of a healthy, happy relationship. Yes. Just helping them to really build their self-esteem back up.
Right.
One of the glaring misconceptions that a lot of people have, and I've been asked this question, you know, why does the person being abused stay in the relationship? And somehow people try to almost imply that it's the victim's fault. And that is the furthest thing from being accurate. And domestic violence, it's a lot of people are ashamed that they are going through that experience. And then who do you tell, and where can you really get the help? And so our job at Providence House is to, number one, provide a safe space to begin to trust. And I think that's a really key word, is trust. And men and women and children have to begin to trust the provider that we, it's a no judgment zone. And our goal is to move them towards a healthy mental and emotional space and place. And I think that's the one thing I want the community to understand. People don't want to stay in that abusive relationship, but somehow and most often don't know how to get out.
Yeah, and different people stay for different reasons. Sometimes it is that the person has really been emotionally abused and feels like that somehow they deserve the abuse. Or it could be that it's a financial issue, and so it's very difficult to leave, because where do you go? How are you going to feed your children or support yourself? You know, there are many reasons that people stay, and it's not because they just want to.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a complex, complicated situation that leads people to find themselves in a situation of domestic violence.
Yes. Sometimes when we're on the other side and we're not experiencing something ourselves, you know, it's easy to say, why don't you just leave? Mm-hmm. You know, but if you're not in the middle of that chaos, and you're not in the middle of that confusion, you know, you don't, you can't really understand what that individual is feeling and going through.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that what you said, Vernie, you know, the trust, because sometimes sometimes these folks have reached out for help and haven't really received the help that they needed or the protection that they felt like that they needed. And so often, you know, there are trust issues. So it really is important to build that trust and to help the person feel safe and protected. I want to invite our listeners to call in with your question or comment this evening. We are discussing domestic violence and, most importantly, prevention of domestic violence. The number is 1-800-552-8502. So I know that we talked some about that, you know, that this occurs within various socioeconomic classes and various ethnic groups, and it happens to men, it happens to women. But are there populations that are more vulnerable to domestic violence?
I think, and Donna and I were talking about this, you know, it's easy to assume that if a person's going through poverty, homelessness, that they are more prone to be victims or abusers. What we have found at Providence House, and I can tell you over the last, you know, 4 to 5 years, that abuse, domestic violence really can happen in very affluent areas, and that is that's the segment of the population that we don't talk about because it's really quietly kept. And so I don't believe that any one segment of a population is more prone to domestic violence. I think when a person is angry, when a person has experienced violence as just a pattern of, you know, growing up, it is easy to replicate. We've had at Providence House some very affluent women, very well-educated, well-spoken, enter our doors because they didn't want their friends at the country club to know that, you know, they were being abused by their husbands or vice versa. And so I don't think there's domestic violence is the one issue whereby you cannot use a broad brushstroke to paint any one group of people. I think everybody and anyone can be susceptible to domestic violence.
Yeah, and that's been my experience too. That I have, you know, some clients that are very wealthy, that are high status within the community, that have prestigious. Positions and you know, within the community and so forth, and it's happening in their homes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think we all know domestic violence is really about control. It is about control. And so people who are affluent and people who are poor, everyone wants to have some level of control. And that's what we have come to recognize. That is the hardest, I think, perception to break when a person comes that, hey, I'm in control now. And that's the hardest step. That's the hardest first step, I should say.
Right.
I want to invite our listeners to call in with your question or comment. Tonight we are discussing domestic violence. The number is 1-800-552-8502. How do we know that someone is being abused? Are there signs? Are there things that we should be looking for within our community, within friends and family, that we should be on the lookout for?
Well, there's not always signs. You know, obviously, as Vernie was saying a while ago, and some of the more higher class families and things that, you know, they become very good at hiding things. But, you know, there are the situations where it's more, you know, publicly. At the Shreveport Bossier Rescue Mission, a lot of the ladies that I minister to there, they're not, you know, higher class financial people. They're more middle class. You know, the stresses of life, you know, finances today are you know, they're finding it harder and harder to keep up with that. The stresses of just day-to-day life, making sure bills are paid, kids are taken care of, sometimes that brings out that you know, that anxiety level brings out that abuse from an individual, whether it's man or woman or whatever. So there are those that it is, you can see it where the ladies are, you know, they may have marks on them. You can ask them what happened, and, you know, they come up with these stories, you know. And sometimes that story may be true, but a lot of the times we find that it's not true, that it's just there. And it's really, it's kind of crazy. You know, they will protect their abuser, you know. And I don't know, it could be from their own shame or just embarrassment that they have allowed themselves to get into that kind of situation. But it's not always obvious, but a lot of times it is.
Yeah, and I know that the folks that I work with, there is a lot of shame and embarrassment. Mm-hmm. It's even difficult for them to discuss it with me, and I'm a counselor. This is what I do.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, is a huge thing, is the shame and the embarrassment.
Yes. Most of the ladies, when I counsel with them and talk to them, they can't believe they're there. Mm-hmm. You know, they can't believe they're at the place of where they're at. And so, you know, that sometimes if they don't have that nurturing, you know, comfort from individuals counseling with them and uplifting them and supporting them, that shame can get deeper and deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's at the mission. That's what we work on, is we begin to help them understand this is not your fault. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't ask for this. You don't deserve, no matter what you've done, nobody deserves to be hit on.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody deserves to be told that, you know, you're scum of the earth, or, you know, the mental side of it. Because personally myself, you know, the physical abuse was tough, you know, but those wounds healed. It was the mental side of it, you know, that was harder for me personally to overcome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's been my experience working with folks, that the mental abuse,
yes,
is often worse.
Right.
And I think that's the part that impacts the children, mm-hmm, the most.
Yes.
And that's the part that is unseen, mm-hmm, how it impacts a child. And often when we are doing an intake at Providence House, and you can always tell when there's been abuse by the responses of the children. And sometimes those outward responses will manifest themselves in school behavior, school performance. But children don't always know how to articulate that I'm angry or I'm anxious, mm-hmm, and they get in school and they're labeled, mm-hmm, you know, with a disability, or, you know, and that is the ugliest side, I think, of domestic violence, because that long-term impact is far-reaching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it does. It impacts the entire family, including the children. And you see that school performance go down. You see behavioral problems go up. And a lot of times the child is labeled. And really, if we just took a look at what was going on at home, we would see that this is not a bad child. This is not a child that has any kind of disorder. This is a child that's in a really tough situation,
right,
and that is handling the best way they can.
Absolutely.
Usually what we see with the children that come through to the mission from domestic violence, there's usually one or two ways that they interact. It's either their anxiety level is they're hyper, you know, they won't hardly listen when you're trying to talk. They can't be still.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the other side of that they're a little bit more introverted. They really are standoffish from anyone else. So, you know, that's the flip side of both. How the kids deal with being in the middle of that kind, mm-hmm, of chaos.
Mm-hmm. I want to invite our listeners to call in with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. Valencia, I would like for you to talk a little bit about, I know that you have this campaign, Don't Stall, Make the Call. Talk a little bit about if we witness domestic violence, if we witness just anything that is concerning to us, what do we do? Who do we report it to? How do we handle that?
Okay, the first thing that I would like for people to do is to understand that it is your business. A lot of times people say, well, I saw this guy beating on his girlfriend, and I just assume I'm not going to get involved. It's not my business. But it is your business, because when things escalate, bullets have no name. So when people start shooting and fighting, then it affects everyone around. And so that's the first thing I want to everybody to understand, is that our violence spreads. And so that's the first misconception. If you witness abuse, the first thing I want you to do is to remove yourself from the situation. Oftentimes, I see videos of people videotaping people being humiliated and abused, and that just breaks my heart, because why would you want to film and then re-victimize the person over and over again through social media? And then you hear people laughing and you hear people commenting, and it's not funny. So remove yourself from that so that you won't be in harm's way should it escalate. Then the second step is to report it anonymously to 911. I've actually had to do this several times, and that's how the campaign was born. I was at a particular store waiting on, you know, someone to come out, and this guy was attacking this woman in the car. She was screaming, people were passing, no one thought to call anyone. And so as I was leaving the parking lot, I made an anonymous call to 911, described the vehicle, told them where I was, and as I was leaving the parking lot, the police pulled her out of the car, and she was covered in blood. And I just couldn't help but remember, it's like 20 or 30 people passed by her, and no one thought to just call. You don't have to give your name. You don't have to go to court. You just simply call, report what you saw, and go on about your life.
So remove yourself, number one. Make sure that you're safe.
Yes.
And that's something that they teach first responders, is you get into a safe spot before you start calling in backup. So get into a safe spot yourself, and then call. And
that's it.
And report what you see. Give the information that you can. And as you said, you don't have to necessarily give your name or things like that.
Yeah.
It is something that you can just report, and I've done it before, and when I've called 911 to report things, you know, sometimes they've asked for my information, sometimes they haven't, and I'm fine to either way, but it's, if you don't feel comfortable giving your information, you don't have to.
And that's true, because they asked me, the three times I've done it, they asked, do you want to give your name? I said, mm-hmm. No, I'm making an anonymous report. Just come send someone. And I've watched as they sent someone. I'm like two blocks away, and I can see that they respond. So whether you give your name or not, they're going to respond.
Yeah. I want to invite our listeners to call in with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. So we've already kind of talked about this some, but I think it's worth revisiting. You know, domestic violence and just, you know, violence in general, it impacts the community, the family, and children. What have y'all seen as far as the impact that domestic violence has on families and on children?
Well, first and foremost, domestic violence is one of the leading causes of homelessness. When there is violence in the home, and when the victim finally decides to leave, the next most concerning issue is, where do I go? If I don't want a family member to know, if I don't want my friends to know. And that's why I'm so thankful that Providence House and the Rescue Mission and other places are shelter for these families. And that's what I want the community to hear. You do not have to stay. There is always a place. And so it's, when we talk about impact, so we're talking about homelessness, but how do you go to work when your face is battered and bruised? And so we see domestic violence leading to a loss of jobs. You don't go to work that way. Or if you miss several days of work, you know, what do you say to your employer? And what people often do is they just don't go. Mm-hmm. And so you then lose your job, and you're unable to care for yourself, and you are unable to care for your family. Having that, any of us, when we've gone through trauma, it is so important to have a system of support around you. But when you are a domestic violence victim, it feels like you're on an island by yourself. And because you don't want to talk about that, that leads to depression. And when the victim is depressed, they can't parent well. And so that depression often trickles down to those children. And so this very ugly, violent process really begins to pick the family unit apart. It impacts you mentally, emotionally, socially, and oftentimes we see victims who've been in those abusive relationships for long periods of time resort to suicide. Mm-hmm. It's one of the leading causes is, you know, I'm embarrassed. I can't even bring myself to talk about it. You know, what's the resolution? And so when people don't see an end, you know, a realistic end for themselves, they often resort to suicide. Mm-hmm. So domestic violence, it is not just, and I think it's been said very well, it does become our business. Sometimes it happens right in our families. And when we see a cousin or an aunt or an uncle that all of a sudden becomes withdrawn, we have a right and a responsibility to say, hey, are you okay? You know, and sometimes we're not equipped to really, if you don't work in this area, you're really not equipped to give good counsel. But there are so many people that you can call. There are so many resources mm-hmm. that you can reach out to. And so when you talk about the impact, again, it is far reaching, it is long suffering, and it impacts your family and members of your family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I will have people call me sometimes that they're like, Shelley, I know that you're not you know, at a homeless shelter, you know you don't do this kind of work, but what if I have someone that needs to get out of a situation and doesn't have anywhere to go, what do I do? So, you know, even if you know, you can always, if you witness something, if you're concerned about something, you can always get information for that person and gather that information and present it to them so that they feel like they have an out. They have some phone numbers. They may not call them immediately, but maybe they'll call them tomorrow. Maybe they'll call them next week. Maybe they'll call next month, because sometimes that's a barrier to getting people these services, is they feel so overwhelmed. Where do I go? What do I do? So the way that you can help, if you do witness these things, might be to call 911. If it's somebody closer to you, it might be to get some resources together and just give them to the person and say, here, in case you need it, I'm here, but here are also some other people that are here for you.
Absolutely. And know what you're equipped to do and know what you're equipped not to do. I'm not a counselor. And so for our families, you know, we have a licensed counselor on staff, but even if I have to go outside of what we do at Providence House, we have to get the resources to help that person. And so just know your limitations. Don't try to fix it. Don't try to be an at-home counselor. Yeah. Make sure we get people the right information so that they get the right level of support.
Yeah, and if you don't know, call one of us. I mean, like I said, I field questions all the time that are not necessarily in my area, but I can say, hey, this is not what I do, but I can get you in touch with somebody who does.
The Shreveport-Bossier Rescue Mission is staffed 24/7. When it comes to domestic violence situations, our door is always open. There's always someone there to take someone in an emergency situation like that. We have other resources that we can reach out to if it's, you know, if the individual comes in and we assess their situation, and if the scope of danger is, we are a safe house, but if we feel that the danger is greater than what we are equipped to handle there, we do have other resources to help get that individual mm-hmm. into a more isolated safe house. Mm-hmm. But we are always, somebody's always there ready to answer any questions that anybody may have. If you know somebody in your family, a neighbor or whomever that may be experiencing domestic violence, you know, we're open 24/7. We're always waiting, mm-hmm. you know, and ready for someone that that needs help in that area.
So somebody that's concerned maybe to go to the rescue mission because, well, what if my abuser follows me? But y'all have those resources available.
Yes, ma'am.
To make sure that
yes,
person is safe.
Yes, ma'am. We actually have ladies in our facility now. We are a secure facility, which we helped one particular lady go through the court system. She has a protection order. You know, we keep that protection order handy. You know, if he even remotely, you know, acts like he's going to come close to our facility, mm-hmm. we will be on the phone calling the police. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's just, as Valencia was saying, it's just taking responsibility. It's just, it is our business. You know, there was times in my life that I was experiencing and nobody stepped up. Mm-hmm. And that was probably one of the most hurtful things, you know, how could you stand by and watch something like this? Mm-hmm. And so as a human society, you know, we can't just stand by and watch this happen. We have to step up. Mm-hmm. Do it wisely. Don't put yourself in danger, mm-hmm. of course, because, you know, domestic violence is sometimes deadly.
Yeah.
You know, all too often it's deadly. And so we have to be wise about mm-hmm. it.
Mm-hmm. And in Louisiana, domestic violence is the leading cause of injury to women, more than car accidents, muggings, and rapes combined.
Wow. Right.
It's domestic violence in our state. Mm-hmm. So it is an issue. It is a serious issue, and we all have to join together to help people who are experiencing domestic violence. And I always say at Providence House, we walk in our lane, and we know what we're good at, and we also know how to refer out, and that's for the protection of those families. Mm-hmm.
I want to invite our listeners to call in with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. This evening, we are discussing domestic violence and domestic violence prevention. I have as my guest Bernie Howard, Director of the Women and Children's Programs for... Oh, no, I'm saying the wrong person. Sorry about that, Bernie. Bernie Howard, Executive Director of the Providence House. And we have Donna Otwell, who is Director of Women and Children's Programs for the Shreveport-Bossier Rescue Mission, and then also provisionally licensed professional counselor with Samaritan Counseling, Valencia Jones. Thanks again, ladies, for being here. So let's take a minute to talk a little bit about your different organizations and what kind of services your different organizations provide, because I think that that's important for the community to know what services are available. So, Bernie, would you talk a little bit about Samaritan and what Samaritan, the different programs and so forth that y'all have?
Providence House is...
I'm sorry.
We all work together, so we're fine. We're fine. Providence House is a residential homeless shelter for families with children. And our goal is to take the entire family unit and move that unit towards their highest level of self-sufficiency. I think one of the things that we do so well beyond food, clothing, and shelter, because we consider that kind of a basic humanitarian right, but we are helping families with workforce development, job training, and education. Providence House is one of the only 4-star child development centers in Northwest Louisiana. And that is no easy feat. And so what we endeavor to do is to make sure that our children are well cared for, that they are kindergarten ready, all while helping the parent to either gain some educational training. We have a partnership with Bossier Parish Community College, where most of our residents either get some type of certification, some type of job training. And so we are trying to move a family and back to self-sufficiency by ensuring that they have the fundamental framework to become healthy and whole. Services that we provide include parenting classes, financial literacy. You know, you can't make money and not know how to use money. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of case management. We start a family with a plan. Where do you want to be? What are your goals? And we try to move that family along that line so that they can accomplish their goals while they're at Providence House. We do things like credit and getting things like their ID, birth certificates. Those are things that people come to us without. And so it was interesting. We had a tour called Behind the Red Door on April 17th, and we do it every third Tuesday of the month, where we invite the community to come in to really see what happens, because we get the same response every single time. I didn't know that you guys did all of that. But families come to us broken on so many levels. And so our counseling, you know, we're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But our primary goal is to move a family towards self-sufficiency.
And ladies, I want to talk about your organizations also, but we have a caller. So I want to take the caller real quick, and then we'll get back to talking about the organizations. I believe it's Cal. Did I pronounce that correctly? Cal? Okay. I think we might have lost our caller. We'll try again in a minute. So, Donna, tell us about Shreveport-Bossier Rescue Mission and what exactly y'all do.
Okay, the Shreveport-Bossier Rescue Mission is actually more than a mission. We are a life recovery program. We have different. We have eight different programs within that program. The first one is the intake program, where the individual comes in and we assess them. Whatever, if it's domestic violence or if it's just someone's lost their housing, we just bring them in, do their intake, and during that 2-week period, they get to just kind of rest, you know, just kind of sit down and be still, get to know us, let us get to know them. And then from that, in that 2 weeks, they get to decide where they want to go from there, what it is that what they want. And then from there, they can decide that they're going to go into our guest program. If they don't have a job, they go in the guest program. And from that forward moment that they decide that they're going to be in that program, they then start looking for a job. They get case management throughout that. Once they obtain a job, they then go into what we call our work program. And through our work program, they begin to save money. We are just ecstatic about our savings program because the women, they light up. You know, at first they're kind of hesitant about it, you know, save money. And so we're like, yes, this is for you. You got to learn how to save money and budget and all these things. And so now when they get paid, you know, they come in, they're just bright and lit up, and they're like, I got money to put in my savings, you know. And so we've had great success with our savings program there. Then when they, once they get to the point where they have enough saved up, then we help them get into affordable housing. Then we have our long-term recovery program that we call our Disciple program. It's a 9-month program. It's just getting to, you know, slow down and just try to figure out who they are in Christ, what it is that they feel that they need in their lives. And so throughout these programs, they get vocational training. We offer retail at our thrift store. We have reception. When you walk into our building, the reception lady that is sitting there is one of our discipleship ladies that's learning how to operate a you know, a multi-line phone system and deal with customers,
which I still
like
haven't
that.
Figured out how to do. I'm going to get trained.
And then we have our culinary arts. If they choose to go through our culinary art program, they have the opportunity to get ServSafe certified, which, you know, if you can get that certificate, you know, you can pretty much walk in any kitchen in Louisiana and get a job, a good paying job. So we offer multi areas of vocational training. And then we have what we call our transition program. Once you graduate the discipleship program, you have the option at that point, if you feel like you're being called for ministry, we then have a 1-year ministry intern program that is doing great. And then after that, you get to go into our transition program. And then you will then start looking for a job. We case management throughout that period, help budget. You know, we like to take care of the whole person, mind, body, and soul. Mm-hmm. You know, because if you can get that whole person to a place where, you know, they got that good foundation, when it comes time to transition into their own living, you know, they got everything that they need to be able to sustain that. And so we are just seeing amazing things happening in our women and our men's lives. You know, it's by ministering to that whole person, mm-hmm. you know, not just one area. You know, they got to know that we teach our ladies that they're more than capable. You know, a lot of things we see is codependency. A lot of women, for whatever reason, if they didn't finish their education or they don't have a college education, you know, they think they have to have a man to survive, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that initiates this domestic violence that we see a lot of. And so we're teaching them, you're more than capable, you know, to do this. And so we're giving them all the tools and all the things that they need and just helping them to understand that they are, you know, they don't have to have these other things to be able to mm-hmm. survive in life.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to try and get our caller on again. We have Call. I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly now. Call?
Correct.
Okay. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
Well, I have a couple of comments. I am a family law magistrate, and I adjudicate domestic violence cases in the district court. And I think it was very, very telling that one of your panelists, there was a question about, you know, what culture may one see domestic violence more. And I want to answer that. I find in my 14 plus years experience doing this, the culture is that when the abuser saw it in their own parents, and that became the new norm of how a mommy and daddy react to one another. And if there was any one thing I always traced to see where it all started with the abuser, it's how he saw his parents react to one another. So it's definitely so deeply rooted in the family and little of anything else. And also, it's very important that we keep training law enforcement and the judiciary to not let up and to always keep the training, to make it a constant, because there are still some jurisdictions that pretty much are domestic violence deniers. And it's just so important that we're always being taught not only for the black eye, but to see other behaviors and be trained in behaviors, what to see in court to protect these alleged victims, and who many instances are truly domestic violence victims. But there's been some great laws that have been passed recently. The firearm transfer, if you are convicted of domestic violence, you are ripped of your firearms that there have to be stored with the sheriff or transferred. That is, I think, a huge relief to a lot of the judiciary not to read about their cases in the morning paper. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping, maybe some of your panelists can comment on that. And one last thought. Domestic violence isn't just the black eye. There's stalking. There is threats. If there's one thing I've learned so much doing this work, is that the threats of leaving, I will kill myself if you leave me, has such power over a domestic partner. And when they want to leave, I sometimes find those threats like that could be more powerful than than the black eye. It's because it keeps victims in their in the home when they want to leave. So it's but that's where the training comes in, and we're taught to spot certain types of behaviors during the court process. And and I just wanted to maybe throw that out there and have some of your panelists comment, if you would. I'll listen for their answers online.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I think that it's good to have that different perspective of kind of someone else's, because we all kind of see domestic violence through one lens, and it's interesting to see it through kind of a different lens. And I know that there are court systems, judges locally that are looking at this in more of a systemic, not only domestic violence, but also drug addiction and things like that as a systemic. This didn't just happen today or yesterday or last month. That this is a family systems problem.
Yeah. Yes.
No, go ahead.
Well, actually, I work with the abusers, and one of the common threads that I see with all of them is there are a couple of things. Number one, hurt people who hurt people. That's the first thing that I see. Number two, the ones who can't break the cycle of violence, which is what he was talking about. I had a guy in my class who told me this story of how when he was 6 years old, his dad beat his mom so severely that she laid on the floor completely unconscious, covered in blood. He had never seen that much blood in his life. He ran upstairs and he covered himself with a blanket, and he began to rock because he thought his mother had died. And as he's telling his story, as a 30-year-old man, he started to rock in my class. And he said, "I just still have nightmares about what I saw." And I stopped him there and I said, "But do you understand that you have now become the nightmare of your children's dreams?" And that's when he finally got it. Number three, they are men who are insecure and have control issues. They feel like if I can control you, that I can control the internal chaos that I suffer with. Number four, they have mental health issues. Number five, a lot of them are pimps. And so a lot of them are doing domestic violence to get men, women to go on to work. Like I said, I do work with human trafficking. And so they tell their stories as well. A lot of them had no father figure or role model in the home. A lot of them are chauvinist. They make the most damaging, you know, vulgar comments about women. A lot of them have anger issues. One of the biggest one that surprised me the most is that they use a lot of religious scripture to, you know, actually condone. They use that scripture about women should submit. I hear that at least 100 times a day. And a lot of times they'll say, well, the Bible says women should submit. And I say, but it also says that the husband should love the wife like Christ loved the church and willing to die for her. So if you're beating her, how are you willing to die and lay down your life for her? But that surprised me. And then a lot of it is substance abuse. So I just had to say that, yeah, I have seen that, where there is a cycle. And it's either the father wasn't in a home, he was in a home, he modeled for them. I've had women abusers where the male modeled for them, and then they became the abuser. And so I definitely understand where he's coming from.
And that's the one thing I wanted to make sure, that as we have this earnest and honest conversation about domestic violence, that we see it, we see men as abusers. I am seeing more women as the abuser. And so we don't know what that face looks like, but there are women who are, I have two single men in the house right now. We don't call it a shelter, in the house right now, who are single dads raising their kids because of the abuse from the child's mother. Domestic violence, and I think we all said it very early on, it is about control. And as our caller stated, those comments about if you leave me, I'll kill myself. Mm-hmm. That is a mechanism for control. Yeah. And if you can control someone's thoughts or behaviors or actions, you can pretty much get that person to do and to be anything you need them to do. And that is the part, when you're working with victims, that is the part that is most difficult to deal with, because it's been so ingrained. And you're talking about modifying behavior, modifying a thought, and that's what makes it very difficult. But he was actually, the caller was very accurate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it is important that we acknowledge that, that unfortunately it's been kind of the stereotype of the abuser has been men, but as we open our eyes to what domestic violence is, that we need to acknowledge that there are plenty of female abusers out there too. In fact, the statistics say 1 in 4 women, 1 in 7 men are victims. So you know, there are also female abusers out there, and it's good to hear that, Bernie, that your organization does provide services to men also.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because they are in need of services. And I think that probably a huge barrier for men is that, you know, that there is this misconception that men aren't the victims of domestic violence.
That's correct.
Yeah. We have another caller. We have, I'm looking, Lee from Natchez. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Hi, this is Leah from Natchitoches.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm trying to read. The print on my screen is really small, and I need new glasses, so I apologize.
It's okay. It's a weird town name. But I don't really have a question. I just wanted to say how much I appreciate everything that everyone here on the panel does. And I know that there is a lot of people out there giving us these services and helping so many people, and they never get the credit where credit is due. So I really, really want to say thank you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for staying on hold for a while to say that, because I know I've had you on hold for a little while.
That's okay.
Thank you so much. And one thing that I'd like to discuss is that this broadcast goes out to a much broader area than just Shreveport. If if someone is listening in one of the other areas that we broadcast to outside of the Shreveport-Bossier area, are there services, are there organizations similar to y'all's available in different areas?
There are organizations in every area that's addressing domestic violence. You know, I think if people were wondering, you could do something as simple as call United Way's 211 and say, hey, this is the issue, and they will connect with resources. And their reach is, you know, goes much further than just Shreveport and Bossier. Mm-hmm. But call your local police, you know, call your local sheriff. They have information. There are counselors in every single region because, you know, suffice it to say, domestic violence happens in small rural towns. Mm-hmm. In large cities, it's everywhere. And so there are resources available. Even if you were to call a counselor, they could lead you to the resources within your respective towns to get the help that you need.
Yeah, because I have people sometimes call and say, you know, I have a family member there in Florida and they don't, you know, I want to get them some help and I don't know what. And so sometimes I'm able to, okay, well, try this, try that. You know, so even if you're not sure, just call. The worst thing that can happen is the person says, I don't know. But usually those of us in the helping profession, we're used to helping. That's what we do. And so we will try to connect you with that help that you need.
Right. And at the Shreveport Bossier Rescue Mission, several of our ladies that are there with us, they are from outside our region. And, you know, where they're from, you know, reached out to us and said, hey, we have this young lady and she's fleeing domestic violence. We tell them, bring her on, you know, so.
So, Valencia, I would like to talk about Samaritan and what y'all do at Samaritan.
Okay. Well, Samaritan Counseling Center is a faith-based counseling center, and we handle all mental health issues. One of the things that my part in Samaritan is that I am the domestic violence advocate. I work with both abusers and victims and survivors. One of the things that I stand on and I believe is that knowledge is power. So one of the things that I do is I do provide free brochures on domestic violence, childhood sexual abuse, and human trafficking. To me, it's better to have people get the information into people's hands because a lot of times they're not ready to come get counseling. They're not, like we talked about earlier, they're not ready to be addressed being ashamed. They feel guilty. So a lot of times I just like to give them the information and let them know, just think about it, because a lot of times all it takes is something as small as a little idea. And then they mull over it. And I want to offer anyone who would like brochures, these are free of charge, to get the information into your establishment, into your waiting rooms. Just give me a call at 318-221-6121. That's Samaritan Counseling Center. Or just simply email Don't Stall, Make the Call. Because I do believe knowledge is power. I do believe that people, when they get the information, that starts the process. I may not have been the one who harvested the seed, but I at least planted the seed. Next thing I want to talk about is that we have a free domestic violence group every Monday at from 5:30 to 6:30. And then we do offer special services for domestic violence victims. So just give us a call or email Don't Stall, Make the Call to find out more information. And if you are a man, this is very important. If you are a man and you feel that, okay, I may have some abuse issues, or I may feel like I don't think I do, but people have been telling me that I'm angry, I fight a lot, please get some help, because we want to break the cycle of abuse. And this is not just for men, this is for women, because I also have male victims as well. And usually they are extremely, extremely ashamed to come forward. So when they come see me, they want to use an alias. They don't want anyone to know because it threatens their manhood. So if you are a male or a female, but I'm particularly speaking to the males because the group that I offer is specifically for males. We can't cross have them in the same room. And the group that I have meets every Thursday. Reach out for help. If you are not sure if you're an abuser, call and ask, and we can talk about some things, because we don't want your children to complete this cycle and then it keeps going. Because a lot of these males, every last one of them that I've been dealing with for the last 2 years, it's been, I saw it, so I repeated it, whether they wanted to or not. And also at Samaritan, I also want to let you know that we have a sliding fee scale for people who can't afford services. and it's also free services. So just give us a call. You don't have to have everything, all your ducks in a row. But like I said, everything starts with the information. The last thing I want to end with is that what the caller called earlier when he said it's not just a black eye, he is so right. Because one of the pamphlets that I have when I talk about abuse, I talk about all kinds of abuse. There's cultural abuse, where you use your culture for abuse. There is emotional abuse, where you do anything that affects the person emotionally negatively. There's financial abuse, where you use money to abuse, control, isolate. There's patriarchy abuse, where men feel like they are superior to women. There's spiritual abuse, where people use the Bible to justify it. There's sexual abuse, where sex is used to dominate, control, or humiliate. There's verbal abuse, where you use words to attack. There's social abuse, where there's isolation, stalking, controlling. There's intellectual abuse, where you put people down, you tell people they're not right, you make them feel stupid. There's pets and property abuse, where you get rid of grandma's, you know, heirlooms, and you sell property that is really important to the family, or you murder the pets, or you get, you know, killed or injure the pets. There's also using children to abuse, where you act the children and you get them in on the abuse. And the last one is psychological abuse, and everybody has heard of gaslighting.
So we have just about a minute left. If you would, I'd like each of you just to maybe spend a few seconds talking about any last minute recommendations or comments that you'd like to give regarding this topic.
I think what I'd like the community to know, moms and dads and aunts and uncles and, you know, family members, don't think that you are or your family members are exempt from abuse. Check on your children. Check on your family members. Check on your friends. Ask those questions. If you see something that looks abnormal, if people become withdrawn, if children begin to display signs of fear, reach out so that we can help on the front end, because we all know domestic violence often leads to suicide or even murder. And so we want to keep our community safe. So don't just think it won't happen to your family. Mm-hmm. And know that not just Providence House and not just Rescue Mission and Samaritan, Project Celebration, there are so many agencies out there that are willing to help. Just reach out to us. We are there for you.
Donna, any parting thoughts?
I just, you know, I pray that our community can recognize that this is a huge situation in our community. Mm-hmm. It's in our community. It's not off somewhere else. It's right here in our community, and it's a big thing. And in our statistics, you know, just here alone in Louisiana, 81% of all female homicides is from domestic violence, and that makes us second in the nation. Mm-hmm. That's huge. And so, you know, my prayer is that everybody understands that, as Bernie said, it could be in your own home, and don't just assume that it couldn't happen to you, because it very well could happen to you. And just be ready and prepared. That's all we need, is just to be ready and prepared to be able to face those situations, because there is so many organizations out there that are willing to step up and help in any way that they can.
Yeah. Thank you, ladies, so much for being on the program. I really appreciate it. We had this evening with us from the Executive Director of Providence House, Bernie Howard, and Director of Women and Children's Programs for the Shreveport-Bossier Rescue Mission, Donna Odwell, and then also Provisional Licensed Professional Counselor with Samaritan Counseling, Valencia Jones. Again, ladies, I really appreciate your time and your wisdom this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mental Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all mental health questions, consult a mental health professional. The views and opinions expressed on Mental Health Matters do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Red River Radio, LSUS, or its employees. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Mental Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran. Production assistance this evening has been provided by Wally Derleth, Sheila Lawrence, and Tim Snell. Support for this program comes from the Knowles Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. I'm Dr. Shelley Visconti. Thank you for joining us this evening.